he was an insider. He came up through the system, and yet somehow...
Oh, yeah.
Somehow he had this outsider's persona, or developed it along the path.
Well, I mean, but, you know, outside, you could say outsider in terms of his posturing. The persona that he created was very much an outsider's persona. You know, railing against the establishment, railing against special interests, etc. But he was very much a part of the local establishment. Went to Cardinal Mooney High School, played quarterback, went to Pitt, was a starting quarterback there in college at a pretty high level, came back to Youngstown, got elected sheriff. He was indicted for taking bribes from the mob. He beat the feds, and he kind of arose as a social hero in a time that, you know, there weren't many heroes around here.
So when you say almost magical powers, was it that he was very, very good at reading people, or he was leading the claims that, that people then solidified around?
Oh, it very much the second, leading the claims that people solidified around. And, you know, when you start talking about the parallels between him and Donald Trump, that's kind of where you begin. He was giving voice to an anxiety and a frustration that, you know, the rest of the country wasn't responding to. You know, the global economy arrived here in Youngstown here first before it hit a lot of the rest of the country. And Youngstown was thrown into just economic chaos and all the things that go with that, the rising crime, plummeting housing values, all those sorts of dreams disappeared for thousands of people. And he gave voice to that frustration and that anger. He couldn't do anything about it. I don't think that he ever really tried to do anything about it, quite frankly. But he gave voice to that raw emotion.
Why was that enough?
Nothing else was happening. And I think he came to personify, you know, their image, the way that they felt about themselves. Yeah, he was the perfect answer, you know, at that time.
I've had some folks say to me that Trump's power or Trump's impact on people in the Mahoning Valley and elsewhere is that he, pretty much like you just said, it's not that he has said, this is what I can do and laid out a firm plan for doing it. But he talks about the fears that these people have first, and they're used to being talked about last, if at all, just not even being on the at the table.
Oh, exactly. You know, that sense of economic anxiety and loss of social status. You know, you could say that Youngstown, Mahoning Valley, kind of became a forgotten corner of America. Well, that has spread across many parts of the United States now. And that's why populism has risen in its attractiveness on both sides, on the left and the right. Establishment has not been addressing these concerns.
So what are the differences between Jim Traficant and Donald Trump?
Wow, that's a good question. That's one that I hadn't really thought of because I see the parallels. Parallels is very striking. The first real significant parallels is the context. You know, as we've been saying, you know, Traficant emerged in reaction to economic turmoil in the Valley in the 70s and 80s. You know, the steel mills closed, the Mahoning Valley lost jobs and its sense of identity, and government couldn't do anything to solve, you know, issues of crime, poverty, and unemployment. And in the midst of this, Jim Traficant beats the corruption indictment, beats the feds, and became seen as the local boy who stuck it to the powers that be. And he became seen as the champion of the little guy. He was the guy who stood up to and beat the establishment. So he kind of became the local hero. Both Trump and Traficant feed off this sense of economic insecurity and anxiety that spread from the Rust Belt to the rest of the country. You know, currently, white working class males feel that he's lost social status and economic security. You look at, you know, what is the definition of the American dream? That I'm going to have, you know, a job that allow me to buy a house, send my kids to college, you know, these sorts of things. And since 2008, you know, all those things have taken a hit. You look at, you know, the idea that the value of your house, that used to be the prime possession. And that's, you know, people don't know what their houses are worth now. They're not making money on their houses as they did. So, you know, the American dream, the definition, has really taken a big hit. So, you know, the context is very much part of it, and both Traficant and Trump kind of feed upon this economic turmoil. You know, the second thing clearly is the message. This is where they're a perfect fit. They go together just so well, because it's the basics of populism. You know, Trafficant was all about creating visions of corruption and conspiracy, of powerful external forces acting to thwart, you know, the middle dreams of middle-class Americans. They both use scapegoating, placing blame on faceless bureaucrats running the government, corruption in the highest places, federal agencies running out of control, multinational corporations, immigrants, etc. Both postured as politicians who dared to speak the truth and challenge the special interests.
When I asked David Beatrice about this, though, he said there is a big difference. Jim Trafficant, as you just said, came up locally, actually went to jail when he wouldn't foreclose on people's houses. You know, had some real populism history behind that populism stance, whereas Donald Trump has not. Why don't people see a difference? Or maybe that's
I think you're exactly right, and I think what Trump has done is they both had have a rhetorical style that's kind of, I call, hyper masculine. You know, where Trafficant was the working class roots, the quarterback, the beating the feds, the tough talk, etc. You know, Trump kind of has, I guess you could say, women and wealth as signs of his virility or whatever you want to call it. But he still has that tough talk, that straight talk. You know, both you would get people to say things like, you know, that they've got guts, that they shoot straight, that they get tough, that they're somehow, with Trump, this amazes me, that he's just like you and me. I've heard people say this, and it's kind of stunning. You know, one of the best quotes I ever heard about Trafficant that really, to me, explained what he was all about in this area, they said he's a man's man in a man's town. And that really kind of resonated me in terms of just the way that he enacted his role. You know, the people around here really responded to that. You know, that's who I would be if I could. And I think that works well for Trump. You know, he does it differently. Obviously, he doesn't have the same working class roots and things like that, although he tries to spin it that way with the, you know, I'm a bootstrap person who just started out with $12 million. But I think they still use that kind of hyper-masculine rhetorical style.
What about relationship with the media? Are there parallels there as well?
Well, he kept them in a distance, and he was able to use two things in his use of the media. He was able to use the one-minute speeches in Congress. They're called special order speeches that you can go up and you can speak about anything you want for a minute, and it's a perfect soundbite to get you on local TV. That's why Congress has them, that I can go up and I can, you know, rant and look like I'm addressing Congress when really nobody's there. So Trafficant used these one-minute speeches, you know, local TV time, local radio, to get the sound bites. And then he would come to town and he would go on 570 AM and a very, you know, very receptive local talk show hosts. He kept local, you know. Congressmen and women can probably control media far more than probably a lot of other presidential candidates, et cetera. They've got to answer to a national media, but I think congressmen and women largely fly under the national radar, and you know, their media relations are very local. So yeah, Trafficant had no problem with the media, even to the point when he was indicted. They started out their coverage, you know, is Jimmy going to beat the rap, rather than examining, you know, are these charges true? What is the evidence for them? The storyline was, can Jimmy beat the rap? And that kind of didn't disappear until well into the trial, when he was just getting clobbered every day in court with evidence of corruption.